You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hi, folks. Be sure to visit my webpage at dr-history.com for over 440 true stories of the Old West. Also, now available on Amazon, my first book, a historical fiction based on true events entitled Coal Miner to Cowboy. The story of a young man born in England in 1850. He wants to be a cowboy and makes his way to America, travels from New Orleans to Independence on a steamboat, hires on as a teamster to Santa Fe, then on a cattle drive to Bozeman, Montana. He also rides shotgun on a stagecoach. He travels with a wagon train, and on his two-year journey, he meets some famous people and keeps a journal of his adventures. The book contains a lot of the true stories from my podcast and is now available on Amazon. Visit my webpage for a link to Amazon for the book, Coal Miner to Cowboy.
Da-da-da-da-da-da. Sheep man's trumpet. Here's Dr. History.
Good morning, Zeb.
Hello, my friend.
Brisk 10 degrees out there right now.
I'm offended at the word brisk. You're not even close.
And at my house, about 16 inches of snow.
You got more than we do.
We did.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time on the tractor pushing snow and cleaning out driveways.
Yeah. So. And you know, when you're on that tractor, and I can say this because I was last weekend too, you're on that tractor all alone, out in the cold, and a lot of thoughts run through your mind about moving to Cancun or wherever.
Oh, you know, it is beautiful, I gotta say.
Oh, yeah.
But
real
cold.
Pretty, yeah.
It is, yeah. So today, we've kind of been following a mountain man trapper kind of theme for the last several weeks. And so I'm going to talk about some of the things the mountain men used in their travels and, you know, some of the equipment and stuff that they had.
Oh, good.
So the first thing I'm going to talk about is the boats.
The boats?
Had. Yeah. You know, for crossing rivers and going up and downstream.
You mean canoes? Or?
Well, I'll tell you. You'll see.
Well, hurry.
Okay, so they used rafts, they used dugouts, and boats covered with skins called bull boats. And you've heard of those.
Yeah, right? I have.
Yeah. So these skin boats were called bull boats because they were fashioned from the hides of large bull buffalo, and which actually they copied from the Indians. And for some reason, the hide of a bull buffalo worked better than the cow. And I don't know why, but that's what they preferred, was the bull.
You're supposed to be in-depth investigating why.
I don't know why, but that's that. So they were shaped like a round tub. You know, you've seen pictures. Or like a half of a grapefruit. And they were difficult to control because they're round. You know, and even if you have a paddle, it'd be difficult, you know.
You're going to be like in a teacup going in circles.
Yeah, going around. But the Indian women often used a bull boat made from a single bull skin for crossing streams, and larger bull boats were kind of canoe shaped, kind of looks like a canoe, and designated as 2, 3, or 4 skin boats. That's how they decided how big they were, is how many skins.
Well, let me ask you, did more than one Indian, when they started these, get in these little boats to control the direction?
Probably. But let me go on here and you'll see how big some of these got. Some of these bull boats. So the large bull boat could haul several people plus supplies and packs of furs. So the mountain men, okay, there's a guy named Thomas James, and he wrote about one 9-man trip.
Whoa.
So 9 men, and here he said, quote, "Here we made 3 canoes of buffalo bull skins, sewing together 2 skins for each canoe, then stretching them over a frame. Our canoe contained 3 men, about 60 traps, weighing 5 pounds." That's 300 pounds right there. 500 beaver skins, another 750 pounds. Our guns and ammunition, besides other commodities. Each of these boats carried an estimated 1 ton with crew and goods aboard.
Obvious question. When they built these bull boats, certainly they had some maiden voyages to see if they were going to leak.
I would think they would consider that.
Yeah.
But there's another writer that tells of a bullskin boat 20 inches deep carrying 2.5 tons with a 4-inch draft.
Yeah.
So they were very seaworthy, I guess.
Yeah. Know?
But the common single-hide bull boat took various forms. Some were round boats built with flat bottoms and straight sides. Others were kind of curved, kind of like an upside-down bull or like a bull.
A
right-side-up bull.
There you go.
The hair was generally left on the hide used to cover a bull boat and was normally on the inside. So the hair was on the inside.
Okay.
Now, the framework of the trapper's bull boat was fashioned from sturdy willow sticks, at least 1.5 inches thick at the butt end. These would cross in the bottom of the boat. Then he bound to a stout ring formed of bent willow poles at the gunwale. In other words, so you got a circle around the top holding all these willow branches. Cross pieces connected these main parts of the frame, and the whole structure was tied together with rawhide thongs.
Really?
So, now, one method was how they built this. One method was to stick both ends of willow sticks into the ground to form a framework. So now we're talking about an upside-down dish. Okay. So you have these arches of willows, all right? After enough of these were bound together with cross pieces, the frame could be turned over and the bull hide fitted to it.
Gotcha.
So, green or wet rawhide.
That's not a one-man job.
No, I don't think so.
No.
So, green or wet rawhide was then stretched over the framework. The hide was bound tightly to the gunwale. It shrank as it dried in the sun or overnight by the heat of a low fire. The hide was bound tightly to the gunwale with heavy thongs all around. If more than one hide was needed to cover the frame, the skins were laced together, uncaulked, with tallow or beer grease.
Where did they come up with all this stuff what to do?
Most of this was from the Indians.
Well, how did they figure it out?
Years and years of trial and error.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah.
But a bull boat was not maintenance-free. Trappers bound downstream for St. Louis with loads of fur had to unload their bull boats every night and haul them onto shore to dry. Constant caulking was needed, and even then the hides were good for a limited time before they began to rot and come apart.
Now, dragging them onto shore, when you come out of a water situation, I'm sure you had to drag it across rocks and everything.
Probably, yeah.
You would think that they'd have a lot of damage.
Yeah. But what they do is they'd unload the boat while it was still in the water, and then I think they could carry it up onto the shore.
Gotcha.
But the single-hide tubs used by Indian women for stream crossing lasted longer because they weren't used as often.
Okay.
So they could go, you know, they'd last longer. But trappers occasionally also used rafts. Now, the secret of building a strong raft, when time and tools permitted, was to notch the logs like you would a log cabin. Okay, notch the logs on each end. Brace them with notched cross logs, then bind all the parts together. Otherwise, the craft might suffer the fate of a raft once built by mountain man named Zemus Leonard. Zemus Leonard.
He's a distant relative of mine.
Yeah, I figured he was. Here's what he said, quote, "Supposing the Indians were not so numerous on the opposite side of the river," he wrote, "I resolved to cross over, for which purpose I built a raft of old logs, laid my shot pouch, gun, blanket, etc. on it, and pushed for the opposite side. Leonard made it across, but his raft struck a rock and came to pieces. Leonard, his gun, blanket, and all other possessions were committed to the watery element. The loss of his gun left him alone in the wilderness with only his knife for protection or food gathering."
Have you ever built a raft?
I have. I've messed around with it.
Yeah, we did when we were kids.
Yeah.
The two neighbors down the road and then another guy, we came over to my house and built a raft, threw it in the Rock River.
Yeah.
And got on it.
Yeah.
Temporarily.
Yes. Temporarily being the main focus there. But the fur trapper and trader's favorite watercraft was often a canoe made by hauling out a large cottonwood log. And, you know, these were heavy. And they were clumsy.
Yeah.
They were sturdy and capable of carrying a heavy load. Two large dugouts slashed together and covered with a platform of poles made a primitive pontoon boat that could haul 10 tons or more. So I'd never thought of them making like a pontoon boat.
Like they do over in Hawaii or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they would do that and they could haul lots and lots of goods that way.
What about their clothing and stuff like that?
We'll talk a little bit about that.
I thought you would.
Okay.
Okay.
So
you want to turn the mic back where it's facing you instead of beating it in circles?
So fire was essential, right?
Yeah.
The trapper's most common practice was to get a fire started by using flint and steel.
Okay.
So fire-starting steels came in various designs. A common one was the C-shaped steel, which fit over your three fingers. This was a popular trade item as well as an essential part of the trapper's outfit. In addition, the trapper carried flints against which to strike the steel. The shower of sparks produced would be directed into a piece of charred linen, punk wood, a twist of dry grass or tinder from the inner bark of grape or dead cedar. Once the spark caught, the tiny glowing spot would gently fanned or blown upon until it produced a small flame.
I have trouble starting a fire in my barbecue pit with starter fluid.
So I have done this, and what you do is you make, we always called it a bird's nest. So you get this tinder, this really dry stuff, and you make a little nest, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you hope to get a spark.
Tried it with the flint?
Yeah, I have. And once you get a spark in there, and once you see the spark, you start blowing on it, and pretty soon you get a little smoke, and then it'll burst into flame. And then, of course, you put it under the little bits of kindling that you've got, and then it goes until you have a pretty good fire going.
You're Daniel Boone.
I am. There's another method I'll tell you about that I've tried.
It's called lighter fluid in a match.
Boy Scout fluid, we called it. But the mountain man had alternate methods for fire starting. One was to use his flintlock gun.
I've heard about that.
Okay. If the gun was loaded, as it invariably was, the trapper covered the touch hole, placed tinder in the pan instead of gunpowder, brought the gun to full cock, and unpulled the trigger to send sparks into the tinder. Into this little bird's nest thing.
Wait, it would seem like you can only mess up a couple of times.
Yeah, so hopefully, you know, they got pretty good at it.
Yeah.
So, now in addition to flint and steel, the mountain man often carried what they called, quote, a burning glass with which he could start a fire on a sunny day.
Sunny is the key word. Yeah.
Lewis and Clark carried dozens of these small lenses for fire making and for trading to the Indians.
Yeah. Really?
And I had never thought about using that. You know, I knew about the...
You get 30 days of clouds and you're cold.
You're going to be... Yeah. But, you know, now another method was the bow and drill.
Oh, yeah.
And that takes a bit of a skill, too, to be able to use a bow and a drill.
Now, don't they teach Boy Scouts that?
Oh, yeah.
And you know how to do that.
I have done that.
You've done that.
Uh-huh. And the key is having the right equipment, the right wood, so that you can get as you turn the bow, then the stick forms a little ember, which then drops down, and you put that into your little bird's nest, start blowing, and hopefully you get smoke.
How long
and fire.
Does this take you?
You know, some guys can do that in probably a minute.
You're kidding.
No, some of them really know what they're doing. They can do that very, very
and
quickly.
And I can start a fire with my charcoal starter in less than 10 seconds.
Yeah. So, you know, trappers traveling alone or with one or two companions were often caught away from their semi-permanent camps in pretty bad weather. And weather permitting, the trapper slept beneath the open sky. He might take the trouble to place his buffalo robe on a mattress of leaves or pine boughs. Then he pillowed his head on the saddle and wrapped himself in his blanket for the night. You know, Zeb, you and I have ridden a lot of horses, and I don't know that I'd want to wrap myself in my saddle blanket after my horse has been traveling all day long.
You take, like, on the old TV series Rawhide.
Yeah.
And they get off their horses and everything, and a lot of times use their saddle blankets, and I'm going, okay.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to wrap up in my saddle blanket.
Yeah.
But anyway, if he was staying several days in the same area, or if the weather was especially bad, he built a primitive shelter, usually near a stream where they had water and he could find wood for his fire and grass for his horse. And his hut would often be no more than a buffalo robe stretched over a framework of saplings stuck in the ground and bent over at the top. In front of his shelter, he built a fire to protect so the fire would come inside.
But what did he use to keep warm at night if he used the buffalo robe for the roof?
Good question. Yeah, he used his saddle blanket.
Oh, okay.
So this was a structure. This was like an upside-down bowl.
I see. With, yes.
Yes. With, so, yeah. Okay. So where am I?
You're right there.
Okay. Number seven. Here we go. Or is that number six? Okay, here we go. I'm going from different pages in this book. So here's something I'll bet you never thought about.
Okay.
There's a thing called a pad saddle. Now, according to trapper Bill Hamilton, mountain men riding into skirmishes sometimes utilized the special lightweight pad saddle developed by the Indians. Okay. Indians used this substitute saddle weighing perhaps 3 pounds to give the horses added speed and endurance in battle. Now, the pad saddle, basically a leather cushion to be filled with dry grass or buffalo hair, with sticks through the center to divide it into halves. It usually measured about 20 inches long by 16 inches wide and was equipped with a cinch and stirrups. Let me show you a picture, Zeb. So look at this right here.
Oh, my.
So it's basically like a pad with stirrups and a cinch.
Yeah.
And that was it. So
that would eliminate me from hurrying down the trail.
Or making quick turns.
Yeah.
Yeah. So now, another thing that maybe you've seen this, pictures of this, but a lot of times they had a case for their gun, leather case.
Scabbard.
Well, not necessarily scabbard like we would think of. When I think of a scabbard, it's something to tie onto my saddle that the gun is going to fit in.
Yeah.
This is more of a covering.
Oh, really?
Just a covering, yeah.
Okay.
So here, let me show you a picture.
Like what Quigley Down Under took.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So here's the picture you see.
Oh, okay, yeah,
so
that's what just, Quigley had.
Yeah, so it's just a covering, not necessarily tied to gun case design varied among mountain men. Some trappers used full cases that were decorated with fringe and beads and things like that. Others were just plain, and some didn't use any at all. And materials commonly used were either a blanket material or tanned buckskin that had been smoked and would stay soft, because this needed to be fairly flexible, soft.
Yeah.
A major consideration in designing the case was always how fast the shooter could remove the gun from the case.
Oh, absolutely.
You needed to be able to get that gun out quickly.
Yeah.
And they also made kind of a partial case that was a little smaller, and it could be taken out quicker.
Okay.
So, now, here's something I bet you never thought of, because I haven't.
Okay, well, that means if you didn't think of it naturally, I wouldn't.
You would
think
not
of
have.
It. Absolutely.
The mountain man needed a method of keeping the powder dry on his gun.
Uh-huh.
Okay. One common practice was to make a cover for the action of the flintlock from rawhide taking from a buffalo calf's knee. Okay. Now, let me show you a picture. We're covering just the flintlock part of the gun.
Huh.
That has to be kept dry, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the shape of the knee of a buffalo calf naturally fit into the gun just perfectly. So they would measure the gun, cut the leather to fit the pattern. The cover is folded over the gun action and secured. So when I say action, folks, that means the flintlock, the trigger, So... But that also made it so that the leather could be removed rather quickly.
But what about if they fell into a stream or something with the powder horn?
They were in trouble. Well, a powder horn was made to keep things dry.
Yeah, but would it? I mean, no.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully they made it, weatherproof enough.
Yeah.
Now, here's another thing I'd never thought of.
Then I'm sure I didn't either.
Okay. We're moving right along.
Yes, we are.
So a knife sheath lined with horn prevents the blade from cutting through the leather. And this was made by getting a horn from a buffalo. He would soften the horn by boiling it. He would put the knife inside the horn. He would then place it between two smooth boards and then tighten it with a vise to flatten the horn to the shape of the blade.
What did they think of all this?
I don't know.
And how did they sharpen their knives?
That I don't know either.
They go down to a sporting goods store and buy one of those stones?
I think they use rocks,
you can't just on any rock.
Well, not any rock. So, but anyway, they would next cut a piece of leather for the sheath and fit this around the horn.
These guys were very inventive.
They were. Now, a lot of times these guys also carried tomahawks.
Oh, yeah.
And they would usually tuck that behind the belt and sometimes tying it in place with a thong so they wouldn't lose it. And others actually made a rawhide sheath for their tomahawks as well.
You know, it's surprising that a lot more guys, mountain men, didn't get hurt if they fell off their horse or got bucked off or whatever. Yeah. And man,
I know we're about out of time. Let me cover just a couple more things real quick. There was a thing called a parfleche. And this was basically, it was kind of a leather envelope that served as a kind of like a wilderness suitcase for carrying extra clothing and property. The parfleche was good for carrying pemmican. And depending on how big they made it, it's kind of like a way to pack your stuff.
A duffel bag.
Yeah, kind of.
A mini duffel bag.
But it's normally made from rawhide and it was able to be kept shut. They also made a pouch, a round pouch with a string at the top that they could pull tight, and they would carry things in that too. And maybe 18 inches by 10 inches in diameter, made from leather, of course. Let me show you a picture.
Yeah.
So here was the pouch that they could
make.
Holy
smokes.
And they would have a string around the top like this that they could pull tight, and then it would cover the top.
And they could carry that on their back.
Yeah. They had this extra string they could just put over their shoulder.
Oh, B. I've only got 30 seconds left.
Okay. Leggings.
Real quick.
Mountain men sometimes wore leggings, that they made from their, to protect them from the cactus, from rocks and brush and things like that. And, of course, they made those to fit because you didn't want a 6'6" guy wearing a 5'8" guy's leggings.
Nah, it wouldn't look good. It wouldn't look very manly.
So that's just some of the things.
Let's do some more of this next week. I'd like to find out about eating utensils and everything else. Of course,
I might
food.
Be able to see if I can find something.
Find something.
Yeah, usually their fingers.
They didn't hold those over the fire.
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money.